host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Welcome, Terry.
Hola, I'm Costa Rica.
So glad to have you here. So I'm looking forward to hearing about your vision for changing the world by becoming more relational with ourselves and those in our lives. But first, I'm wondering if you can walk us back a bit with the historical path you took before you became a couples therapist, and how early can we go to find the seeds where you became who you are today?
I tease and say I started my career as a family therapist at about age 4 in my dysfunctional family, traumatized kids. I developed what Alice Miller called the gift of very strong EQ because I had to do what I do to regulate these crazy people called my parents. I then was a hippie. I'm a 60s kid. Went through all that, drugs, spirituality, and then college. I spent 4 years in a PhD program in comparative literature and left with the highly lucrative degree of a master's in comparative literature. Almost PhD, but I left. I moved from New York to Boston, wrote a novel, drove a cab, got a job in a loony bin because I shot at twice driving a cab. I thought I'd do something better. It was the 70s, still sort of the spirit of the 60s, so I was in a unit in Somerville, Mass., but with more responsibility than we would give a fully trained degree person these days. I ran groups, I supervised people, and I fell in love with therapy. Travis Glenn, I say I became a therapist in order to garner the skills I needed to have the conversation with my father, who would not talk, but I got him. And he opened up and told me his story. And in so doing, I said I became a therapist to get the skills I needed to have the conversation. So come in.
Terry, I'm so touched to hear that story, just the rich variety of experience that doing the work at that time and becoming a therapist. Was this intention of talking to your dad front and center, or did that recognition come later?
No, it's like a Zen koan, you know, the riddle that you meditate on. The Zen koan, my father was a depressed, angry, violent man. Mm-hmm. And he was the son of a depressed, violent man. And I'm here to tell you, I have two sons, 33 and 36. And they do not say that. And that is the greatest achievement in life.
That is such the that we need in the world. I'm wondering, were you ever able to have the conversations that you wanted to with your father?
To a degree. At 27, he did tell me his story. His mother died when he was 8. He had a brother 2 years younger. In the Depression, his father lost his store and lost everything. They were staying with his father's brother. His aunt was pretty mean to everybody. His father took him to the garage with his little brother and turned on the car and told him to get in and go to sleep. And my father knew this was wrong. And he physically fought his father. And his shoe broke the window of the car, and he grabbed his little brother, and he got out. And the next day, Aunt Sylvie had made up a story about his stealing from her daughter, and he was exiled. He went away at the edge of Philadelphia at 10. And he would walk 6 miles to school, have dinner with his father and brother, and a cousin, and then walk 6 miles back to go to bed. And that's what he did. It's childhood.
Thank you so much for sharing this heartbreaking story. And thank you for the resilience that you've developed in yourself, the work and the mess ups and the inspiration that you have for making this world a better place. Yeah, I'm really, really touched to hear how you got here.
And then I became a family therapist. I became an individual therapist to heal myself, and I became a family therapist to learn how the hell to have a goddamn relationship because I'm completely clueless. And it took years of training. As a, you know, there's a saying, therapists need to be in therapy 40 hours a week. It's me. And then I was largely dissatisfied with what the state of the art had to teach. I was 30.
Okay. Yeah. And so you were dissatisfied with what the promise of therapy was at that point and saw there was something new to offer.
Yes. If I may, it'll be a while before it comes out, but I just finished filming a what will be hopefully a docuseries on RLT and my life. And it includes me at 34 in family therapy with my mom and dad. I hadn't seen this thing for 40 years. And what I saw was about the family therapist was sort of going on intellectually, burbling away. And 34-year-old me sidelined the therapist, went with dad, and began doing with my dad pretty much what I now teach people to do. It just, I figured out how to get through to people like my dad and my mom. I say that every man be that I heal is my father, and every man in therapy is my father. I change the legacy.
I'm really glad you got to have some of these conversations with him and really solidify what you're offering. That's a big statement, that everyone you work with is your father in a way. And so it kind of invites the question to that. What's the right relationship, masculinity? What is the right relationship to this dynamic that we become a parent and we don't know what the tools are?
Radical position. I don't really believe there is such a thing as masculinity. I mean, physiologically, of course. But science has done a great job of proving that X qualities are masculine and Y qualities are feminine. There's just way too much variation in real human beings for that. My model, I believe that what we call masculine and feminine is largely socially constructed. And I talk about patriarchy. Patriarchy is the water and we are the fish. My pal Gabor Mate told me a joke. He said, there's an old fish who's swimming by and he sees fish. He says, hi guys, how's the water? And he swims off and the two fish look at each other and go, water?
Yeah.
Anyway. We're the fish and it's the water. And there's a patriarchy, it has a gender binary. I believe in whole human beings. And the first thing we do is all guide. We have our say, half of these qualities are male, half of these are female. We know what they are. The second ring of patriarchy is traditional masculine qualities and devalued feminine qualities. Take this in for a minute. What this means is that the essential relationship between masculine and feminine in Western culture is contempt. What it means to be a man is to not be a girl. Nancy Turtle, it's a negative, not being vulnerable. It's not a positive identity, it's an avoidance. And then the third ring of patriarchy, which influences my therapy, is what I call core collusion. And this is kind of ugly. Whoever is on the quote-unquote feminine side of the equation has a deep compulsion to protect the disowned fragility of whoever's on the masculine side, even at their own detriment. And that's true if we're talking about a child to a traumatizing perpetrator. It's true if you're talking about heterosexual relations.
Wow, when you put it this way, it just makes so much sense that we're looking at what could become a healthy integration of these traditionally thought of binaries to whether we're biologically male or female or transgender these days.
Yeah, I want whole people. It pisses me off when people say, oh, Terry, we want strong, big-hearted men. I want smart, sassy, sexy women. I want us all to be all of the qualities that nature.
This is beautiful. Despite bringing what culture taught us, this availability is something we can cultivate. And we'll be talking about that more. I'm speaking with Harry Real, author of Us. If you want to know more about his work, you can go to terryreal.com. That's T-A-L.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Travis Glenn Sabara. I'm here with our guest, Harry Real, and we're speaking today about finding the wholeness in each of us and what we might need to do to get there.
A couple of views. One is this. I started off the book this way. Neurobiology teaches us that the idea of a freestanding individual is wrong. We are a species. We are born to be relational. Relational connection is our birthright. Is how we function species. It puts years. The lack of social connection, a new research says that, is the equivalent of smoking a pack and a half of cigarettes a day. This is not just about your quality of life, it's about staying alive. It's essential, but we don't live that way. And I talk about the two essential mistakes of Western civilization that we're all swimming in. One, we are individuals. We are apart from nature. That's what the word individual means. And two, this is patriarchy. We're not just apart from nature, we're above it. And if you're a man, the control tends to be overt. Sit down, shut up, and do it. If you're a woman, you're traditionally socialized to be indirect. I'm sorry, but that's called manipulative, enabling. But in either case, what I want people to do is to wake up to what I call ecological wisdom, ecological humility. Our relationships are our biospheres. We're not above them, dummy. We're in them. We breathe them. You can indulge a temper tantrum over here in your ecosystem, but you'll breathe in your partner's resentment, lack of passion, whatever, over there. You're inextricably linked. You can't escape. You know, so thinking ecologically, they're synonyms. Everything changes. For example, if one of you wins and the other one loses, you both lose. I don't want to fix here, but I always think of Israel and Palestine. If one of you is deprived of, you know, fundamental rights, they're going to wage war with the other one. It's just, you can't run away from each other. And it's the same thing in a marriage. If the loser will make the winner pay for it. This is not idealism, it's real politics. So things like this. When you think relationally, the answer to the question who's right and who's wrong is irrelevant. The answer is who cares? The real how are you and I going to work that works for both of us? So once we start living relationally, the language changes, the thinking changes, and the tools can I tell you a story? I
know. Please do.
I love to tell a story. It's a true story. This is a classic heteronormative fight. She, him. You're a reckless driver. Him to her. No, I'm not. You're too nervous. She to him. No, you're reckless. You do that. No, you're nervous with your sister. This is what I call an objectivity battle. Who's right and who's wrong? Okay, session with me. This is a true story. She to him. Honey. But why don't you start with that? Honey, I know you love me. Listen, call me nervous, Nelly. Tell me I'm neurotic. Maybe. I don't care. When I am in the car with you, and you weave in and out, tailgate people, go above the speed limit, I drive myself crazy. You're driving. You may know that you're in control, but I'm the I don't know that, honey. And I just get, I'm nervous. I know me. Drive the way you want when you're on your, but when I'm in the car as a favor to me, could you please slow down and drive more conservative? And swear to God, ready? Sure. And what could have been a fight that went on for 40 years is 7 minutes, because it's not about win, lose, right, wrong. It's about humbly from the eye, subjectively, as a favor to me. You love me, would you? Honey, of course I will. Boom.
Not objectivity of facts, who's right, who's wrong, but that there is, we put relationship first. We put the softness and the kindness and attunement first. And wondering if you could share with our listeners a bit of the practice of your relational mindfulness with first consciousness, second consciousness, of how we might start if we can't be in a session with you personally.
Yes. Well, all relationships are an endless dance of disharmony and repair. Ed Tronick, the infant observational researcher who looked at mothers and little baby, you know, closeness, then there's a burp or gas, and then everybody goes crazy, and then the nip, and everybody goes back closeness again. We're endlessly repeat, like walking, balance, imbalance, balance. And this is the rhythm of all relationships, including adult, intimate, the sexual relationship. Now, our culture doesn't teach us how to get from disharmony back into repair because it doesn't even acknowledge that disharmony exists. You're talking to the guy who coined the phrase normal marital hatred. And I want to tell you, I've gone around the world for 30 years talking about normal marriage. Not one person has ever come backstage and said, Terry, what is okay? That disharmony phase hurts. Oh, my God, this is a terrible mistake. I'm trapped. We all marry our unfaithful. We forgot us an angel who's going to complete us and help us and heal us. James Franco, the father of family, a couple therapy, said, the day you turn to the person sleeping next to you and go, oh, my, this is not who I fell in love with. This is a dreadful mistake. That, says Franco, is the first day of your real marriage. So how do we negotiate that? Negotiate perfections and your partners. The world of individualism and patriarchy teaches us nothing. In fact, it fills us with a lot of crap. But let me give you one example. In your patriarchy, you can either be connected, accommodating, compassionate, or you're independent, strong, stand up for yourself, quote unquote, masculine. But you can't be both at the same time. Accommodating, you can, but you can't be both at the same time. Because power is power over, not power with. When you step into power, under patriarchy, break connection. And one of the things I say is that leading men, women, and non-binary folk into intimacy is synonymous with moving beyond patriarchy, because patriarchy was never built for intimacy. It was built for stability. So how do you do it? Loving power. Soft power. And none of us know, I have to teach people, and my therapist and teach people how to do it. It's to how to stand up for yourself and cherish your partner in the same breath. It's the difference, Travis Glenn, between saying, I don't like how you're talking to me, stop it. Well, and saying, hey, listen, man, I want to hear what you have to say. I can't listen when you're yelling. Tone it down. Because I want to hear it. Could you tone it down so I could hear it? Two are saying the same damn thing, but which of those two do you think is going to be more successful? So, of course, I have a story. Can I tell you a story?
Let's hear a good story.
Loving power. Came in young. It was like a classic. She wanted sex none of the time. He wanted sex all the time. So like any good therapist, I get them off of the position. It means them. Like a lot of women, she had come to see sex as a chore. Was divorced from her own desire. He was demanding and pouting. And Hans was a typical male deal. He filtered all of his vulnerable emotional needs through sex. When they had sex, when he could give her an orgasm, he'd done his job. He was good. He shoved them. They were close. Okay, they leave. True story. Come back 2 weeks later. We're done. Not all my, only the share, but right. We're done. Okay, tell me. Sure enough, just days after the session with me, he wants sex. Rather than going to the other side of the room, which is her usual, we talked about loving power. She walks over, puts her arm around, looks him in the eye and says this, "Honey, the first thing I want you to know is you are so attractive. You're such a sexy guy. You're such a manly guy. And yet you're so kind. You really work hard to please me. By the way, I don't have sex tonight. I just think you're the cat's meow. We'll have sex later in the week, but I'm a little tired tonight. Anyway, I think you're great. Is that okay that we put off sex?" And he looks at her, and for the first time in their marriage, he goes, sure. Because she had cloaked her no with so many yeses, he was fine. So there's a way of saying yes to the relationship and yes to the partner and stand up and assert yourself all at the same time. But under patriarchy, we move into what I call individual empowerment. And that's true for women under feminism, for 12-step cure of codependence, for therapy. I call it, I was weak, now I'm strong, go screw yourself. I am a woman here. I'm going to speak. I found my voice, bar the door. No, relational power is the next step. I was weak, now I'm strong. I'm going to stand what I want from you. Let me be clear. What could I give you to empower you to do that for me? Who sounds like that? We're a team.
I really love hearing this. It sounds rather than taking positions for other each side of the false binary that you're saying, let's bring the best of both, maintain the softness, and also let's not make power wrong, but let's be in our power in a healthy way that serves from the softness.
That's beautiful. Yes. And that goes back to where we started with wholeness. You can be soft and in the same breath. You can be a whole human being. But as you enter into that kind of wholeness, and when I teach people to be relational, it's endless movements like this out of these binaries into something that's more mature and whole. When we do that, we move beyond the culture at large. We become pioneers.
And this is why I think we're not going to get there on our own. We need to even hear that this is possibility from you, from a friend, a neighbor, or best of all circumstances, a parent, that we get to be the best of this and no longer have contempt for what the harm which either side of the polarity has been causing.
That's right. And therapy, you're talking about first order change and second order change. First order change is the rearrangement. Second order change is transformation. I don't want the devalued, quote unquote, to now move into the masculine and be as obnoxious as men have always been. I want to blow up the damn binary. I want us to be able to have it all. We really can. We can be assertive at the same time.
It's really such a gift that you've made your work available to the world in your books, in your workshops, in your online courses. And I feel so blessed to be having this conversation with you today. I'm speaking with Terry Real, author of Us. If you want to know more, go to terryreal.com. That's TerryReal.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Travis Glenn Sabera. You're listening to New Dimensions.
Brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. Our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store, and you can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
I'm here with Terry Real. We've been talking about the wholeness that is possible, the best of each so-called false polarity of masculine and feminine. But I want to talk a bit how these unhealthy places or these unskillful strategies be in place so innocently from each of us. We're talking about the adaptive child. And so I'm wondering if we can help our listeners understand the innocence of these that may not actually be useful.
Yes. As a couples therapist, when I'm sitting with a pair, I say the most important question, kids, money, whatever, a good couple can handle stress. And it's not even the choreography, which all couples therapists get trained in. The more she pursues, the more he distances, the more he distances through the vicious circle. The most important question is this one. Which part of you am I speaking to? And there are three parts of us in relational life therapy, the field I've created. The first is the prefrontal cortex, the part of the brain that develops at 26 years old. For you moms with ADHD boys out there, have faith. They shape up at 26. I'm telling you, I've had one. That's a long maturation period. This is the part, this is the most evolved part of the brain, present base, stop, think, listen, choose. My friend Thomas Lubel says, to observe is to have choice, because you can choose. Subcortical parts of the brain that are all about trauma. Famously now, with all the focus on trauma, the wounded child part, the amygdala limbic system, very primitive parts of the brain. When I do work, wounded children tend to be first moments, very young, the part of experience, the abuse or neglect, totally reactive, totally flooded. Between this very mature part of you and this very immature part of you is a mediator. I call it the child, also subcortical, automatic, not thoughtful, not something that can be chosen over you, but it feels like an adult. And almost all of the folks that I've worked with have lived most of their lives out of their adaptive children as an adult. The culture at large rewards adaptive children. I deal with a lot of high rollers, and they've done beautiful.